A Lovely Death is intended for mature audiences. Episodes discuss topics that could be triggering to some, including death, dying, and grief. We are not therapists or grief counselors. If you are in need of support, please visit alovelydeath.com for a list of resources that can help. Opinions expressed by guests on this show do not necessarily represent our views or the views of the podcast.
I'm Carolyn Fletcher.
And I'm Sarah Siplak.
And this is
A Lovely Death.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Carolyn.
How are you?
I'm good. I feel like one of these days I should just respond and be like, man, I'm not good.
You should.
Yeah.
Just to mix it up
a little bit.
I'm just so excited to see you all the time.
I know.
Why didn't we do this 20 years ago?
Seriously. Well, we saw each other all the time 20 years ago.
That's true.
Because we worked together. And then under those circumstances, it was sometimes just like, oh, here we go again.
Can you believe we used to do that? We worked all the time.
All the time.
Big shout out to everybody in the service industry. You have been heroes this year. We know that you're all struggling right now because there are not enough people working with you, and we feel you 100%.
Yes, yes. We were just talking about how crazy it is that everything just changed overnight, which I think we knew was coming.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's over.
No, I don't either. Like the 1920s, the 2020s.
Yeah. Like, well, just that everybody's so excited and we're getting vaccinated. So everybody's partying and hanging out and the stores and restaurants are opening. And then the fall will hit and it'll get cold. And then people will start getting sick again. And then we'll have to pull back a little. It's going to be crazy.
Oh. But cautiously optimistic that we get to do a little bit more.
Absolutely.
See a few more people, maybe hug a couple people.
Yeah, man, I have loved hugs.
Yeah, it's real important.
They've been real good lately.
Sometimes even like making it a little weird, which I kind of like.
Yes, yeah. Like just a little too long.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I'm here for it.
I'm also here for it. But yes, I am. I'm doing well. I love the sun and I love being outside. So, and you? You good?
Yeah, I'm doing really well. I feel like I'm enjoying the sunshine and seeing people a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's been good. It's been really good.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Same.
And it's Pride. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Pittsburgh is definitely feeling its Pride.
It is.
Which makes me proud.
Yes.
And Beaner is feeling really proud.
Bean is very proud. This is a very proud household. There's rainbows everywhere.
So we're kind of breaking from tradition today a little bit.
We are, but I think it's a good break from tradition.
Absolutely. We have always wanted to do a series of sort of mini-sodes where we talk about different aspects to end-of-life planning.
Yes, which is something that you and I have talked about numerous times that I keep saying, oh, that's something I need to think about. My mom keeps saying to me, you really need to think about this, especially since you have a child, and I just haven't yet. So I'm really excited to have this conversation because if any of our listeners are like me, they're interested and curious to know how to do this end-of-life planning and just don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
So I think this can be a good conversation and, you know, help people think through end-of-life stuff.
Yeah. And there are a lot of great resources out there. We'll put a bunch in the show notes, but we're going to base a lot of what we're talking about on the Conversation Project and their sort of suggestions for people, and also Five Wishes, which is the document that you and I are going to go through.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about end of life, there's a couple of different pieces that people need to think about. So they need to think about, you know, people often think their funeral arrangements, and then separate from that, they need to think about a will and estate planning. But before you die, you need to think about things like your power of attorney, who is going to make decisions for you. And power of attorney ends when people die. So that's a document that only lasts until death. You need a financial power of attorney, and you need a life power of attorney. And then you need somebody who's going to help make your healthcare decisions, right? So that's your healthcare proxy, You need a person to be your healthcare proxy. And then today, what we're going to be talking about is your actual wishes for care at the end of your life. People refer to it as a healthcare directive or a living will. They use them interchangeably, but really, a healthcare directive is the set of wishes of what you want and what you don't want. Mm-hmm. And then the living will is actually a document. It's a signed, notarized document that would come into force if you are terminally ill. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more of a binding document.
It makes me think about having a birth plan.
Exactly.
Especially because you just never know what your end of life is going to look like and be like, and if you'll have all of your faculties. And so I'm excited to have this conversation, and I'm hopeful that people will also feel comfortable reaching out to us if there's something that they are interested in learning more about, because I'm kind of learning about this as we go, similar to potentially many of our listeners. So
I think that's the thing about death is we're all learning as we go. Like David and I started talking about this when I told him what we were going to be recording, and we realized that our wishes today won't be our wishes when we're 60 or 70, maybe 80, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's good to be also something that you review with your loved ones, like, you know, have a family meeting every certain number of years and talk about these kinds of things. I mean, the other two things I think we should also say, people need to think about whether or not they're going to be an organ donor.
This is different than, like, I'm an organ donor on my driver's license.
You are, but actually, organ donation is technically a legal right, but it is something often that family has the last say in. So it's good to let your family know, because most organ donation that people think about, they think they're donating like their lungs and their heart, but that's not always the case. If you die and you're on life support, you have the opportunity to donate most of your organs. But most people who die at home, their organs that are taken could be used for things like research. So it's important to sort of know, you know, where your organs might be going, and also discuss it with your family, because, you know, your loved ones might not know how passionate you are about being an organ donor. And it helps organ procurement organizations, one of the hardest phrases in the world for me to say, OPO. It helps your local OPO know when they come to meet your family, you know, it is a little bit time sensitive. And so it helps them and your family have a conversation after you're gone, so they're not sort of hanging back, because that's what they'll do. They don't want to make people turned off by the idea of organ donation if they can help it.
Yeah.
And hopefully in the future we can have someone from an OPO come and talk to us about organ donation, because it is very interesting. And then the last thing would be, very often people consider end-of-life housing when they have this conversation. So just to talk to your partner, you know, if one of you does have an illness that maybe affects your memory or something else, to have a conversation about where you'll end up and sort of your living situations, whether or not you'll live with a family
living
member.
At home versus living at a hospice.
Yeah. And maybe put that in place, you know, put some insurance in place for long-term care or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So many things to think about.
A lot.
It would be really interesting to see the research that's out there about the percentage of people that actually think about this stuff.
I'm so glad you just said that, because the next interview that we're doing is with Gail Rubin, who calls herself the doyen of death. She's one of the pioneers in the death care movement. And she says that 30% of people plan and 100% of us are going to die. So we're going to talk to her about that when we talk to her very soon.
That's crazy. I think so many of us don't want to think about dying. And that's part of, you know, it's pushed deep down inside.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lots of funeral directors don't have their plans done.
Yeah.
They just don't want to think about it. So today we're going to use the five wishes outline and sort of just go through it together and talk about the different pieces to maybe just give people a window into the types of things that you should talk to your loved ones about. And maybe, you know, just through us talking about it, maybe you could see that it's really not that complicated or scary, I don't think. But they are interesting questions and they do, you know, take a little bit of reflection.
Yeah. My mom's going to be so thrilled that we're having this conversation.
Yay.
She's been asking me for so long.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mama. My dad used the five wishes, and I can't remember if my mom has also. So it's, you know, I don't like having this conversation with my parents because it's sad and not morbid, but it's not a conversation I enjoy having, but it's important. You don't want your loved ones to be stuck having to make really hard decisions at the last minute. You could be really ill for a long time and then die and people are prepared, or it could happen really quickly and people are totally unprepared. And to help them make those decisions is a good thing. So,
yeah, my dad was really positive about me being in death care, and he was a pretty open-minded person. He wrote his own obituary and was involved in talking to us about what he wanted for his funeral, including the fact that he wanted all female pallbearers. But, you know, he really was somebody who didn't, he wanted every intervention. So he didn't want to think about maybe at some point throwing in the towel.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to think about hospice. The day he died, someone came in and said, do you want to think about hospice? And he said, no. And the truth is that my dad would have lived forever if he could. And so it's good to know, like, really what that made it hard for us at the end. But in the end, I can look back and say he would have wanted to try everything. Because he just never wanted it to end. And that's fine, too. Like, people can say, you know, no.
Yeah.
The bitter end. I know that for me, there's lines. At least now there's a line for me. So I think I've expressed that often to people around me. And especially because we know we have Alzheimer's in our family. It's good to know, like, what your what your line is.
Yeah.
You know, looking at, and if anybody wants to look this up again, it's you just Google the five wishes and it comes right up. And you can also have them mail you out copies of this. You can buy them for really nominal fees. I think it's $5 to get some of the paper documents sent out. But the first wish, wish one, is the person I want to make healthcare decisions for me when I can't make them for myself.
Ooh, that's a big one.
It's a big one. And, you know, even though you have someone who's super close to you, like your spouse or partner, you may think that that should be the person, but sometimes it is not the right person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that person, if they have a reason, some people really don't like talking about these kinds of things or they have anxiety. You might want to pick another person either to do it in conjunction with them or to do it for them. Mm-hmm. And it's really good to let everybody know. Like, I suggest getting everybody together, whether it's on Zoom or in person, and just say, look, this is the decision I made. This is the reason why. And then, you know, if somebody dies themselves or moves away or a relationship changes, it's important to update that.
Is this legally binding? Like, is this something you get notarized or something? Because you and I had the conversation about end-of-life care, especially if the marriage is not legally recognized or if someone has transitioned, dead-naming someone, or if you misgender, you know. So is this, are the five wishes a legally binding?
Well, they can be. To make them legally binding, you do need to take other steps. Mm. And I think it also goes state by state. So you should look at your state laws. And if you're doing estate planning, you can also double check that with your lawyer, or you can also talk to a funeral director in your community about it. And end of life and when you're living are different.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, the person that you pick, if it is someone who is what we call it is counterindicated in death care. So let's say you and Scott are married. If one of you were in medical crisis, it would legally be the next, you would be the next person without question. If one of you died, then most likely it would go to Wyatt. Now, until Wyatt's of legal age, then it would go to parents, and then it goes to siblings, then it goes to grandparents, then it goes to cousins and nieces and nephews. And there's sort of like in, you know, in death care, and I'm sure in health care, it's again, different in every state, but normally you're looking for your nears and dears legally. And in some family dynamics with blended families, divorce, maybe conflictual divorce, who that person is can become really complicated. Some people divorce or don't divorce, right? It's like a common law divorce. They just move away from each other.
Yeah.
That can make things really complicated at end of life or in death.
Yeah.
So if you're a person that has a situation that maybe isn't clear, which is, you know, most of us, it's good to at least put that down in writing. And very often if wishes are in writing and they're with a whole group of documents, the law would back that up.
Wow. A lot to think about.
It's a lot to think about legally. Which is the other thing is, you know, people think at end of life, I want to make it easier for my next of kin. They think about just like deciding on a casket. Mm-hmm. It's like the least part of it. It's everything else. Yeah. So do you feel like in your mind, you don't have to say who it is, but do you feel like you'd be clear right now on who that person is?
Yeah. I mean, I think it would definitely be Scott. Mm-hmm. And I think that he and I have occasionally had conversations that touch on this. It's probably important for us to have a deeper conversation about it. I think that were I to give him some directives, I think it would be hard for either of us if we lost the other one. But I think that did he need to make some decisions, he could he could definitely do that. And he knows where I'm coming from. You know, I have no desire to be buried in a traditional cemetery in a traditional casket or anything like that. But I think it would fall to him. And if something were to happen to him or to both of us, hopefully Wyatt would be of legal age before that would happen. How about you?
I think David's ready to step into that role. And he also has a close relationship with my sisters, who are the other people I think who would have, you know, opinions about what happened to me after I was dead. But I think the thing that I think is really comes to mind for me is what happens before you die. Mm-hmm. Because I think when you die, those decisions are less complicated in some ways. It's really about disposition and where your body will be. Right. And sometimes it can be complicated. I don't want to insult anyone who has ever lost custody of the body of somebody that they loved, because that can be heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But I do think that, you know, in my family, we had a sibling have a catastrophic accident when he was 17. And he was only a few years from being an adult. And if that accident had happened after he was an adult, how would decisions have been made for him in those moments? And so I think having known my parents to have gone through that process of making end-of-life decisions and hearing them talk about it, I worry about the worst-case scenarios.
Yeah.
And nobody in the world likes to think about what would happen if your family was in, for example, a car accident. But it's a reality that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having at least one of those scenarios in your mind when you think about these things helps, could help someone over the worst day of their life know that they were at least heading in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I are both on the verge of tears even talking about this. So, you know, I think that that's the thing that people need to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Is that it's a gift to your loved one.
Yeah.
To tell them what you would want and what you wouldn't want. And so that person, you know, is the first part of that.
Yeah.
So this leads into the second wish, is my wish for the kind of medical treatment I want or I don't want.
Jeez. I mean, that feels like such a broad question, because there's so many different types of medical interventions based on whatever it is that you're dealing with at the time.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't even know.
Well, they do have resources here where you can go to one of the pages in the document and you can look at end-of-life situations and then sort of go through some of them. So just, you know, for the sake of our discussion.
Right. Life support. If family members feel differently. As you were talking, I was thinking about my sister, and that I should probably loop her into this conversation. I'm mm-hmm. curious to know where she stands also. It's not something we've talked about.
Yeah, I mean, people who have terminal illnesses like cancer or ALS often have to talk to their medical providers about what they want until they can't communicate anymore. And then they're more encouraged either by their doctors or maybe by hospice to sort of have their, you know, wishes at least verbalized, if not written down,
mm-hmm.
as their situations change. You know, some people decide to stop chemotherapy, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I've known people who have had ALS who basically have had their sort of line that they draw.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be changed at any time, mm-hmm. right? But just the things that for them would make life intolerable. And that's really hard to think about. And, you know, I've said to my siblings, if I have Alzheimer's, I think I'm going to, just like Maude and Harold and Maude, I'm going to have a big party and we're going to say goodbye. And I'm not, you know, I'm not going to follow that path. Now, I'm saying that as somebody who just hit 50. Am I going to feel that way at 60 or 70? Like, yeah. Maybe not. And who knows what treatments will be.
Yeah.
At that point.
So true. I hope my mom is okay with me saying this, but she just lost a friend a week ago, her dear friend Fern, who I think was in her 90s, and she made a choice to stop the medical treatment that she was having. I can't recall what it was for, but it was just really lovely to hear my mom talk about it. And of course, everyone is very sad, but she made a decision that she did not want to continue treatment. And I totally respect that. I mean, I witnessed a good friend at the end of his life. My last interaction with him, you know, he kind of was making eye contact, but we weren't really sure if he was there, and he was at home and he was surrounded by his loved ones. But it's hard to think about, and it's such a personal decision. Do you want to do chemo if you have a really aggressive form of cancer and you're going to lose your hair and you're going to be feeling ill? And
I mean, one
heavy,
of the,
heavy, heavy.
It's very heavy. And, you know, one of the other conversations that we'll have to have in an episode is about the right to die.
Mm-hmm.
Many states are changing their laws to accommodate people who choose not to continue or to end their life based on their diagnosis. And, you know, there was a very public case of a young woman who had brain cancer a few years ago who chose to be very open on social media about her choice to end her life based on her diagnosis. You know, if you have something like brain cancer, do you want, you know, or an illness that would be very painful? I talked to somebody who had a sibling who had ALS who didn't want, he said he didn't want to suffocate. I think that all of those things are really, really, really valid.
Yes. And
should be someone's right to make that decision.
Absolutely. That sounds terrifying.
So I think just like letting people know sort of what your, at least right now at the moment, what your sort of, what you would want medically, what you wouldn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And just, it's also not the kind of thing, people always think do not resuscitate means that somebody's going to just leave you to die.
Right.
They discuss your options of, you know, at that point, if you have a DNR, most likely you would already be undergoing treatment and have an idea of how significant your illness was.
Mm-hmm.
Then wish three is my wish for how comfortable I want to be. And again, this is about thoughts and feelings around having pain and symptoms controlled and what you would be willing or not willing to do to trade off for comfort.
It says here, talk about whether being alert or being drowsy would matter to you in having your pain relieved.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine if you are visiting with your loved ones, if you are constantly in and out of consciousness because of sleeping, because of your medication, that would really affect your quality of life.
Yeah. I don't think I've had that many situations where I've had to have that kind of intense medication, but I don't like the way it makes me feel. Just the thought of that feels awful.
Well, I don't even like taking Benadryl or NyQuil or DayQuil because I feel like...
I do like a good Benadryl at night every once in a while, Sarah.
Well, okay.
Especially
at night,
between
yes.
2016 and 2020.
Yes. Agreed. But yeah, I don't like the way when I feel hazy and I can't make good decisions and I don't have good conversations. Yeah, I absolutely understand why you would want to say, I don't want this medication if it's going to make me not be able to be present.
Yeah. And after our conversation with Nisha, you understand how important hospice becomes in helping you make these decisions because they talk through a lot of this with you and also talk to you about when you want to maybe stop taking certain medications and move to just palliative care. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's good to sort of know, sort of, you know, where, you know, what that cutoff point would be for you, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, the idea of comfort is really interesting. And, you know, I like what you're saying about being in and out of consciousness. I hadn't really thought about that, but that's also something that I think that there's, you know, I'm assuming the dying process is very much like that, right?
Right.
That we come in and out of consciousness.
And is it also when it says physical? Okay, so make sure to talk about thoughts and feelings about having hospice care. But, you know, the location. Do you want to be in a hospital bed in your own living room? You know, if your house has steps all over the place, can you make it to a restroom if you're able to? I mean, so many things to think about as far as what you're physically able to do as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, living in a nursing home facility or a care facility can be lovely, I'm sure, can be beautiful and enjoyable, and it can also be awful.
Alienating, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think also this idea of what you want to have around you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you want music or do you want silence? Do you want visitors? You know, all of those things about to one person might be really comforting and to another person might be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And to have to think about if you, this is maybe a weird place to take this, but I think about how when I go out, especially now after being in quarantine, stay at home for so long, sometimes I just want to look nice when I go out.
Yeah.
I want to fix my hair,
yep,
maybe put on some makeup. And so if you are unable to leave your bed, is that something that you're okay with? Is if you have visitors and you're not looking your best, is that
yeah,
going to make you sad and uncomfortable and
yeah,
not want to visit with people?
Sure. I mean, yeah, also things like elimination. Mm-hmm. What if you don't have control of your bladder or control of your bowels and mm-hmm, you know that that's a possibility? I mean, it is all of those things, I'm sure, depending on what your experience is and what you're undergoing, mm-hmm, all of those things would be things you'd want to consider.
I can't remember who I'm thinking of, if it was the Tuesdays with Maury guy or Maury Sendak. One of them was talking about how they just accepted that they took care of their children and cleaned them up and dealt
yeah,
with them when they were infants. And then they just had to accept that when they got older, that that may be something that someone else would have to do for them. Do you remember who that was? Which interview that was?
I'm guessing it's probably Tuesdays with
yeah,
Maury.
What's his name? Mitch Albom. Yeah. So I think it was Mitch Albom who was talking about just accepting that he was okay with having people take care of him. And I think that's a big decision for a lot of people. Maybe some people are like, no, I'll have a medical professional do that. I don't need any of my family members.
Yeah, it's interesting. For me, it was the thing I was the most afraid of when my mother had Alzheimer's was bathing her. You know, I was pretty young. I was like 30 something. And I was really afraid that like it would be like horribly embarrassing for the two of us. And honestly, it was like something that brought her such comfort at that time, getting her hair washed and having lotion put on, all of those things, that it ended up being really good bonding time for us. And it ended up being like one of the greatest blessings was to be able to help her in that way. But initially, if someone said to me when my mother was diagnosed, bathing your mother is something you're going to have to do, I would have been really put off by that. And I wouldn't have tried it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I sort of did it and I became really comfortable with it. So I think it's very interesting also to sort of like really dig deep to see what, you know.
Yeah.
We're in a culture where people are used to like sort of having other people take care of older people. And that's not the way a lot of most of the world works.
I know. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
It's something that I really have only seen in movies and things. But the way that most other cultures treat their elders is, yeah, here they're just kind of forgotten. Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation.
It is.
Oh.
So this leads right into wish four, my wish for how I want people to treat me, which I think is, you know, there's a lot there. Whether you're a young person, a younger person that's terminally ill, or you're a person of advanced years, and you are going to be interacting maybe with staff at a nursing home or some type of facility, or even people coming into your own home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's really important for everyone to remember that people are people no matter what happens.
Yeah.
You know, I think asking your family to treat you a certain way, whether they include you in certain conversations, have certain conversations without you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that's really that. It seems like such a simple thing, but it seems like it encompasses a lot.
Yeah. Well, I like how they've worded it here, which says, describe in detail how you want to be treated so that your dignity can be maintained. So what does that mean to you? And it made me think, just when you were talking about one of the things that Nisha brought up about having other people come into your home and caretake for you. And that's an important decision for you to make, is what do you want that to be?
Definitely. And whether you're talking about, you know, somebody's race, ethnicity, the culture they come from, their sexual orientation, family structure, gender identity, you know, you may have caregivers who are also maybe not familiar with the way you live your life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to sort of just make those things clear. I think we're evolving a little bit in our culture that we can address some of those things head on. But I think that it's important to sort of, you know, I'm thinking about gender identity and to just be open and say, you know, hi, I'm Carolyn and I use she, her pronouns. Whatever it is, you know, whatever those things are, this is this person in my household and this is how they're related to me. Mm-hmm. And this is how, you know, they want to be addressed, or this person is looped in, and just sort of like being able to state your wishes for how you want mm-hmm. to interact with people. I think that's really interesting.
Well, and the hope would be, again, going back to Nisha and Kristen, they both brought up, it's not their role to push any of their beliefs upon the people Absolutely. They're working with. It's about meeting people where they are.
Yep.
And so the hope would be that if you are bringing people in to take care of you or to be with you, that they are respecting those boundaries. And I mean, I guess the hope would always be that anyone in healthcare is willing to be...
You want them to be aware
yeah.
of your... preferences. And again, I think, you know, hospice nurses, people that come into your home, I think they have a lot of training around that. Mm-hmm. But I think when you interface with medical personnel, it's not always the case. Mm-hmm. I have a friend in a nursing home right now who's experiencing some things where staff is not treating him with a lot of respect. And, you know, again, I all due respect to people who work in nursing home facilities. Really overworked right now, not always paid what they're deserved. But, you know, some of those facilities, we have people who are working too much and don't have the time to address each person individually.
Yeah.
And that's really hard. Wow. Yeah. So a lot here, Sarah.
There is a lot here. That does kind of go into wish five, because you're talking about your healthcare team and loved ones. But my wish for what I want my loved ones and healthcare team to know. So what do you want them to know about you? How do you want to be remembered? And other things that might be in your heart, like forgiveness. Wow.
This is a big one.
That is a big one. I mean, it's something you hear about and see about portrayed in the media and stuff, is the things that come up in the last moments
yep.
of I need to make peace with this, or I need to take this to my grave with me, or yeah, expressing that I would imagine would be really difficult.
And Nisha talked about a little bit about this, allowing people to really talk about what the work that they want to do at the end of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think some of this is sort of communicating to people things that they feel or that they've done or that they regret or that they're proud of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they get to sort of convey that. And sometimes they can't convey it verbally, right? Sometimes they can't communicate it in different ways. And I think it's really interesting to think about thinking about it now is a way for maybe people to do some of that work before it's later
yeah
in life.
There was I was listening to a podcast of this, I believe he was a doctor of some sort, I don't know if it was a PhD or an MD, and he ended up becoming the last person to be with death row inmates who had things that they wanted to say before they died and didn't have anyone to say them to, and allowing everyone the dignity of being able to share what they need to. I mean, obviously that is a very different conversation, but just listening to him talk about how he just wanted to respect that this was a person who needed somebody to talk to. And the first person that he went to their execution, he didn't want to do it. And the person on death row asked him to be there and just said, I don't have anybody else. I just want one person I know. And that's how he got started doing this. And just knowing that we all deserve again, I fully I need to put out there, I recognize this is a heavier conversation and everybody's going to be on different sides of that conversation. But I think the idea of dying with dignity and being able to share with people around you what you want at the end of your life is really important.
Right. I think it's a basic human right. I mean, it's something we talk about in funeral service. Are you ever allowed to withhold service? And I know that after the Boston bombing, there were a lot of families turned away.
Yes.
And I, obviously, Boston is very near and dear to my heart. I really hold those funeral homes up and say, you know, maybe you should look within yourself. If somebody commits a crime, don't their families deserve a good end for them? I mean, it definitely, this is something, it's a different road to go down. But I do think this question of like, no one should put a value judgment on anyone else's ability to have a good end to their life, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And lots of conversations could come out of this. I mean, I think euthanasia is another topic that at some point we should hit where, mm-hmm. you know, at some point, doesn't somebody have the right to say, like, I'd like to go?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Totally. And I think, you know, to keep us on track and not go down the route of crimes and death row and things like that, but just within the end of life community, just knowing that whatever dignity you can hold on to is really important. And I feel like, you know, if you think about where we are now as far as a culture that is coming around to accepting, somewhat coming around to accepting the various gender identities and pronouns. And I've just heard some horror stories of people who are trans or went through transitions or changed their names and then they die and their family wasn't accepting and misnames them, misgenders them. And that's horrifying and sad. And so it's important to make those wishes known, and going back to even wish one of having someone, hopefully, in your life that can help make sure that that doesn't happen.
Well, you need someone to be with you in the medical system if you are someone who's trans, no matter where you are in the process of your life,
mm-hmm.
because people are misgendered constantly. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's just so hard with bureaucracy to keep everybody's record streamlined with one consistent set of names. But it's absolutely true. And getting back to sort of this question of the things that you want people to know, healthcare is really evolving, I think, in the sense that they're becoming aware of these issues, that people want to be looked at as a person. I think, you know, not so long ago, doctors were held up on high as people who were all knowing, and they didn't need to have the soft skills that now we expect, where they come in and talk to people as individuals. I mean, I also go to the midwife center for my wellness. I always have since I was in my 20s. And the reason why I go to them is because they look at you holistically as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in gynecological care, I never felt that from other doctors that I went to. I felt like they just saw this one thing in medicalized terms. And I just could never imagine approaching, you know, if I had ever had children, I never could imagine the idea of giving birth in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel that way about death. You know, like for me, I personally would choose not to die in a hospital. I would rather not have my death be medicalized if I can help it. Of course, we don't all have that choice.
Yeah.
But I think that it's interesting to sort of look at birth and death as things that we pull apart as part of our life cycle rather than specifically in medical terms, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's our experience.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a lot here, Sarah.
There's a lot here. Yeah.
I think that this is a really good step into these conversations. And again, we'll have the information for the conversationproject.org and for the five wishes in the show notes so that people can go and take a look and read for themselves. And we are always resources for you if you want to reach out to either one of us at alovelydeath.com. And If you have any questions, we're certainly open to even bringing some of those questions into our next conversation. And these little mini-sodes, Sarah, I don't know what you're thinking, but I'm thinking we're going to kind of intersperse these between interviews, absolutely. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's partially why you and I came together to do this podcast, is to continue conversations that we were having, because you have so much more knowledge about all of this stuff, and I'm fascinated by it, and it's something that we all need to think about. So I think I love having these conversations.
Well, and I think that it's really important to have your perspective, because even though I have some connections to death care, I think that, you know, I want people to think about their death in terms of themselves, apart from all that other stuff. I think it's mm-hmm. important to think about your death as part of your life experience. And hopefully people own that a little more and think about it a little more.
Mm-hmm. And our, you know, our goal moving forward is always that the conversations that we have are with a varying group of people that have different, that are coming at this from really different aspects. I think I'm pretty excited. Hey, we're always excited. I love that the three that we've put out so far have been so widely varied.
Definitely.
And I think that the conversations that we're having about who we're going to talk to moving forward are pretty varying as well. So, you know, we'll just keep bringing these conversations to you, and we'll intersperse them with our own conversations. And always please feel free to reach out if there's something that you'd be interested in learning more about, because even just going through these five wishes, I'm now recognizing there are so many things to think about of what you want to happen at the end of your life. And it's important to think about it. You know, I will be 45 in a couple of weeks, which feels, would have felt very old when I was younger, but now doesn't feel so old. And it's not something I think about, or nor have I planned for, and I should. I have a child, and anything can happen at any moment. And so it's important to think about what you want to happen. So I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because it's opening up resources to start thinking about all of this.
Absolutely.
I think a lot of people, when they think about death, think about the will and the assets and the who gets the house and the money. And well, I don't have any money, so that's not really what it's about. I mean, that's part of it for sure, that we won't necessarily talk about, but yeah. Dying with dignity. Death with dignity.
Death with dignity. And our next interview really leads into this. Gail Rubin is a funeral event planner who has a company called A Good Goodbye, funeral planning for people who don't expect to die. And she is a great person to talk about bringing this conversation out into the light and getting people to talk about something that's really uncomfortable.
I'm very excited to meet her.
She's the best. I'm going to try really hard not to fangirl, because I read her book, A Good Goodbye, when I was in school, and I just love her to pieces, so.
I will have to check that out, for sure.
I have a copy I can lend you.
I would love that. Thank you.
Terrific.
So we'll keep coming at you.
And guys, thanks for these reviews. I really appreciate the reviews you guys are leaving online. iTunes really is kind of the only game in town when you're doing podcast reviews these days. Mm-hmm. So if you are able to just hop on over to iTunes, I know most of you are listening through iTunes, because we can see everything about you.
But and you know what we didn't do at the beginning was thank yous, which I had a conversation with my wonderful, wonderful friend, Cindy Howes, because she has a podcast called Basic Folk. And which is amazing. If you are into music, you should definitely listen to it. But she became a Patreon supporter, which was just really lovely. So thank you so much, Cindy. We podcasters have to stick together.
So sweet. Thank you so much.
And my dad, Jack, he became a Patreon supporter. And again, you know, we talked about it last time, but it's really helpful to us to have that support to continue doing what we're doing. I mean, just thank you all so much for listening. We have both received so much verbal and written, I guess, via email feedback from people that this is something that you're interested in listening to. So we really appreciate your support and that you're along for the ride with us.
Seriously grateful. You guys are amazing. You are now covering our costs for producing the podcast every month, which is just amazing. There are more things that we'd like to do, but your continued support is really the reason why we're able to do this. Podcasts are a labor of love that are sort of expensive.
Yeah, it's true.
Who knew?
Who knew?
But thank you so much, you guys. And we can't wait to talk to you again. And drop us a line. We'd love to hear from somebody.
Yeah.
And if we could hear from somebody we don't know, I don't even know what we would do with ourselves.
We'll have to do a live show sometime and then leave a phone number. And so we'll be streaming live. I used to love listening to Car Talk with Click and Clack.
I love Car Talk.
Yes.
Oh, so good.
So good.
They were the best.
But all of these shows that I listen to on NPR, I love that people can call in.
So if you're ever nervous about reaching out to a podcaster, if you don't know me or Sarah personally and you wrote us an email, we would both shriek.
It's true, we would.
Endlessly.
Endlessly. Maybe a little jumping up and
down.
We
would even say you're probably our new best friend. So.
Sorry to our current best friends.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
We will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.